I'm David Ford, and our little international theme continues now from International Film Fest right here in our own backyard to international award-winning poetry and North Carolina native Terry Kirby Erickson. She's recently completed her fourth collection of poetry. The Press 53 author will unveil her latest, A Lake of Light and Clouds, at the historic Broyhill in Clemens on April 3rd. The book launch gala is also a fundraiser for the Novant Health Derek L. Davis Cancer Center Simstein Memorial Fund for patients unable to afford treatment. A Lake of Light and Clouds has already received high praise from New York Times best-selling author Jill Connor Brown, who writes that Terry, quote, makes us see everyday things with new eyes and gratitude that beauty is not the exception, but the rule of life.
This particular poem is called Loretta Ray. My mother, lipstick red, barefoot, toenails painted the palest shade of pink, stretched out her dancer's legs and rubbed suntan lotion into a face that should have been magnified on a movie screen, the kind that bowled men over even with curlers in her hair and children dangling from both hands wherever she went. They never saw the greasy chaise lounge behind our house, where the sun whispered sonnets in her ears and darkened her skin with hot kisses while the radio played Blue Velvet. And the green grocer and the mailman and the gas station attendants and the jean-clad teenage boys loitering downtown on Saturday afternoons, who caught glimpses of Loretta Ray every now and then, if they were lucky, would have dropped dead with desire if they'd seen her sunning herself in our backyard, wearing nothing but a two-piece bathing suit and a lazy, sun-drenched grin. The best years of her life almost, but not quite, passed.
Loretta Ray by Terry Kirby Erickson. That from her new book of poetry, A Lake of Light and Clouds. I love that line. They never saw the greasy chaise lounge behind our house where the sun whispered sonnets in her ears and darkened her skin with hot kisses while the radio played Blue Velvet. Such a wonderful image, and not only does it take me to dreamland, it kind of shifts gears, it slows the pace down, too. Do you think much about rhythm or tempo in your poetry at all, or no?
I do, and after I write poems, I usually read them aloud. I do a lot of pacing and reading because I want to know how it sounds. I don't want there to be anything in the poem that people trip over so that they are out of the moment of the narrative. So I want to be sure that it's smooth and that I'm telling whatever story that I need to tell in a way that is musical and rhythmic.
I'm glad you said musical, because that line really hit me as and just the sounds of the word, the syllables and the vowels as they pair up in her ears and darken her skin with hot kisses. It just rolls off the tongue so nicely, and it does sound like a musical line.
My mother was always a gorgeous woman. She was homecoming queen in her high school. She was a majorette. She was a model, a ballet dancer. Really very beautiful. And she still is. You know, there are two parts of her life. There's this part, and then there's the moment in 1980 when my brother died. And so I kind of look at my mother's life as divided, just like mine is divided. And there was the time before that, and then the time after that. So any time that I write poetry about my mother, there's a certain poignancy to that.
I want to treat listeners to another of your poems, Terry. And this one, we're going to shift gears now, because this is a very serious subject matter. Leroy and Viola.
Come Saturday morning, poor black men gathered on street corners, waiting for white men in Cadillacs to drive by slow, shouting, "Hey, boy," from their rolled-down windows, "get in," which meant there was a job digging ditches or other back-breaking work for less money than it cost to feed the family dog. Nights were harder, what with hooded gangs of racists wrapped in bedsheets roaming the countryside, and woe to anybody who wasn't white once those half-drunk, hate-mongering mobs with their burning crosses and links of rope arrived on the scene. So in 1965, when married mother of five, Viola Gregg Liuzzo, volunteered to drive 19-year-old Leroy Moton back to Selma, both fresh from a freedom march in Montgomery, Alabama, the sight of a white woman with a black man in the front seat of a vehicle sporting Michigan plates didn't sit well with Klansmen, who were, as usual, wild as pent-up ponies in a barn blaze. So they chased the pair down and fired two bullets into Liuzzo's brain, laughing like loons when the car careened into a ditch. Covered in blood, Moten played dead, surviving the shots, the crash, and the killer's swift perusal of the wreckage. But Viola Liuzzo is gone, except in memory, where the same reel runs over and over in Leroy Moten's mind. A pretty woman's profile, pale as milk against the purpling sky, and his hand, dark as rivers on the radio dial. Strangers joined forever by history, seconds before the slaughter.
Really powerful stuff, Terry. And before we get into the just kind of the poem as a whole, the line again, talking about sounds and combinations of words, and what a great image. Wild as pent-up ponies in a barn blaze. Great, great sounds, great image.
You know, again, it's with that rhythm and the music and the sound of it.
Well, describe what it took to get here. Pale as milk against the purpling sky and his hand dark as rivers on the radio dial. What did it take to get there? And just if you could describe the satisfaction of arriving at a powerful, we'll call it a metaphor like that.
Well, I worked very hard on this poem because it's a true story and it's an important story to tell. And I wanted to be clear and succinct and at the same time give readers a visual so that this was a real thing because, you know, I lived in that era of segregation and I was born in 1958. You know, I was a child in the 60s, but, you know, we saw little things here and there. And the part that I wrote about the cars driving by slow, looking for young black men to work, my grandfather used to do that, you know, not in a ugly or mean way. It's just how it was done. On Saturday, you would go drive downtown, and there were men on the street corner waiting and looking for work. And that's how it was done. And I never forgot that after someone told me. I can't remember. It may have been my dad. And so I wanted to use that.
Then you arrive at that specific turn of phrase and getting back into kind of the process of writing poetry. Mm-hmm. Just to give us a hint of the effort that it took to arrive at that particular group of, that one just struck me, much like the Blue Velvet reference did in your mother's poem, the color of the hand, the pale as milk hue to her skin. How did the process work?
Well, I was always moving toward that moment. That was a central image in my mind when I began the poem. So when I finally got there, trying to find the words so that people could see that in their mind's eye, the white skin of this woman and the black skin of the man, you know, to know that there were people around who thought that it was wrong and sinful and an abomination for them to even be in the same vehicle, when in fact, by this very act, these terrible murderers nailed these two people together for all eternity.
What great irony, horrific irony, but when you look at it through that lens, that's exactly what they did.
That's exactly what they did, because all this was a ride. She was just giving this young man a ride back from the march, as she had done for many people. So they created a couple out of them, in a sense, which is what they were railing against in the first place.
For you, this terrain of race relations in the South is very familiar. You once told me a story about across the street conversation you had, a young African-American girl in your neighborhood, and that story stayed with me. I wonder if you could share that with listeners.
There were a couple of black families who lived across the street from us in our neighborhood, and we did not have anything to do with them, and they didn't have anything to do with us. And I didn't really understand why that was, because I was only 4 or 5 years old. And I think it was mutual. It wasn't, you know, one side or the other, but it was just the way it was back then. Anyway, there was a little girl across the street, and we wanted to play with each other desperately. We stood and stared at each other. We both had baby dolls. We just wanted to play. You know, children are not born prejudiced. You know, you have to be taught this. My parents were not biased or prejudiced people. I think everybody was just falling in line with, you know, what was expected culturally. One day, that little girl, whose name was Loretta, she crossed the street. And that was such a bold, brave act for such a tiny little girl. So we joined hands and started walking down the street. And I'm sure we caused quite a sensation. And how wonderful it was to finally be able to talk to her and to just be children together. These are the kind of moments that I like to capture in my work.
Terry Kirby Erickson is the author of 4 collections of poetry, including In the Palms of Angels, winner of 3 international awards, and her forthcoming collection titled A Lake of Light and Clouds, both out on Press 53. On Thursday night, April 3rd at 7 o'clock, you can hear Terry read from her new book during the book launch gala in the beautiful historic Broyhill in Clemens. Musicians Lee and Susan Terry will perform live during the launch. We've been sampling from them throughout the interview. And well-known artist Stephen White will be a special guest at the party. His painting for Terry's book cover will be on display and for sale. A portion of the proceeds from this fundraiser book launch event will go to support Novant Health Derek L. Davis Cancer Center Simstein Memorial Fund for patients unable to afford treatment. You'll find links to more information at WFDD.org. Well, that's all for today's program. Our technical producer is Eddie Garcia, and our associate producer is Bethany Chafin. You'll find podcasts of Triad Arts Weekend along with pictures and lots of helpful links on our website, WFDD.org, and click on Triad Arts Weekend. Please send your questions, comments, and suggestions to triadarts@wfu.edu. I'm David Ford. Thanks for listening to Triad Arts Weekend.